Good to see all of you. Hello, happy Memorial Day. I can't tell if this is just like, you know, two services back to one for the summer, or if you all decided to come to church on Memorial Day weekend, which is crazy, okay? But it's so good to see all of you. For those that are new or visiting, my name is Ryan. I'm one of the pastors here on staff. If you're just joining us this weekend, what we're doing this weekend is a little different than what we've done over the last 4 weeks or the last 3 years, basically. We are wrapping up our series, Work That Matters. Instead of me talking for 30 or 35 minutes, what we're going to do is we're going to have a discussion with this panel, not necessarily of experts, but I'm sure they are experts in many things, more of a panel of experience. And just as a summary as to what we have been looking at over the last 4 weeks in this Work That Matters series is we've been going after a bigger story and a better story about our work, the work that we do, the work that we do professionally, the work that we do at home, the work that is applauded, the work that is unseen. At the very beginning, we learned that in the beginning, work was good, that work is not a curse, that God gave us work as a gift, but now work hurts. What we learned in the third week is that even the work that is overlooked, that work of care, is so important to God. In fact, it is most important to God. And last week, we looked at this idea that if we want our work to last, anything that is done in love will resonate throughout eternity. And so I'm joined here by some individuals, some real people with real work in our community who are going to share their real stories about their life with work. And my hope for this morning and our time together and our conversation is that we would gain some clarity, that we would maybe gain some comfort, that we would maybe be challenged in our work, and that we would gain some wisdom to see how our work matters and how God can use even the most ordinary, mundane things that we do for his glory and for our good. And so would you guys just welcome these three panelists up here this morning? As you can see, three of us are dressed pretty uniformly today, and a comment was made that we were a boy band, and I would call us a middle-aged man band, right? So let's just start with some simple introductions this morning. How about each of you just go ahead and tell us your name, what you do for work, and maybe give us a sense of how you describe your current relationship to that work. And you guys can grab the mics and we can just go for it now. So, yeah.
I was looking at you because I thought, Rand, you should go first. I'll go, okay. My name is Mark Sandino. Thank you for allowing me to share today. I am a small business owner slash entrepreneur, mostly in the tech space, although I have, it's been like a slow train wreck, if you think of it one way over the years, of the kind of businesses I've had, or a train to success, depending on the moment, right? It's been a really interesting thing, speaking to the relationship I have with that chosen career. I consider it an incredible privilege. I love to do what I do. I like the freedom. I like the influence it has garnered me and the opportunity to lead. That's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Sweet. Thanks.
My name is Rand Unger, and I'm an ER doc, and pretty new in my career, just 30 years into it. And so, but you know what? I absolutely love what I do. And I think it was week one, Ryan, where you were talking about that process of chaos into order. And that's in the emergency room, in the most chaotic of situations, I absolutely love. It's like part of what I was born to do was to step into a situation and walk a person, walk a family through to establish order, hopefully come up with a good result, but even not, to walk them through that process to where it's a healthy experience and the trauma is a minimum. I love what I do.
Awesome. Real quick, hold on. We should have another microphone. Where's the third microphone? Is it right there? Yeah, just grab that. Give Paula that. Paula needs her own microphone, right? Paula needs her own microphone, right? Come on. Yes.
All right, great. One.
Good.
Glad Hi, everyone. Yeah. Nice to see you. My name is Paula Solis-Croc, and I teach. I'm a professor at Everett Community College in the Education and Early Childhood Education Department. And I'm also the department chair there. And I'm sorry I missed the memo on the uniform. I had no idea. But I love my job, although it is frustrating at times. It involves humans. And all of us that work with humans know how difficult that can be at times, especially when they are young, just figuring out their lives. And not really sure where they want to go or how they want to achieve things. There's a lot of coaching involved. There's a lot of encouragement involved. And sometimes it's just frustrating, like when they come to you at the end of a 10-week quarter and they say, what can I do to pass this class? Oh. And you say, you could have engaged. Well, actually, what I want to say is, You can invent a time machine and go back in time and do the assignments. But in actuality, I don't say that. But it is frustrating. So that's mine.
Thanks, Paula. And you're our manager. That's why, you know, you dress professionally.
Oh,
you're the manager
right.
of the middle-aged man band. So now that we know where you guys are coming from, I just want to zoom in on maybe a particular moment in your guys' work history. Can you share a time when your work felt deeply meaningful? When you sensed that what you were doing actually mattered to God or to someone else?
As I was thinking through, As I was thinking through this question, I remembered a time, this had to be 20, 25 years ago. You know, as you're going through training, the focus is on the disease, the focus is on the issue, and it becomes the broken arm in room 3, the abdominal pain in room 6. And I remember walking into, it was room 12 in Mount Vernon, Skagit Valley Hospital, and it was a belly pain. And I walked in the room, and God just downloaded something into me that said, this is my person. This is the person in room 12. And it did something into me where from that day on, I don't look at the disease, I look at the person, and it has given an eternal perspective on what I do. The arm's gonna heal, the belly pain's gonna go away. But what is the interaction that I can have with that person in that short time that we have together to make a lasting change? And so the moment that I thought of when you brought that up was that.
Yeah, so it didn't become just about the act or like the healing of the thing, but it was like the person you were actually serving in that moment. God was like, this is a person made in my image. You are tending to them right now.
Yeah, there is value in work.
Yes.
I mean, that arm needs to be addressed. The belly pain needs to be figured out. But it also is a conduit for that interaction that, you know, I am Christ's, you know, representative, and to be able to share that in a way and in a situation where that they're open to that type of thing is a real privilege.
That's great. I can play off that as well because, you know, I'm teaching, so there's a lot of content involved in both of the subjects I teach. But really when it comes down to it, I've realized that it's about speaking value into students' lives and to remind them that they have purpose and that they were created with a purpose. And a lot of students, when they cross my path, they haven't had family or parents that have told them that throughout their lives. And they may not know the God that loves them. And I'm very clear at the very beginning of class that I have a strong faith and I'm a believer, and that informs how I teach this class and how I interact with you. And so that's my job, is to continually pour life into these kids. And like what Rand said, it's about the interactions. We still have a job, right? We're still doing our work, but it's about those little bits of hope and peace that we pour into people.
Paula, what would you say to like parents or individuals who are connected to middle school, high school, college-age students who maybe they've even sat in a series like this, like Work That Matters, and it's like, well, I don't have a job, I don't work yet, but they're looking for purpose, and in a sense, their studies are their work. How would you encourage those parents and those people in relationships with them to help those students view their work as students as something that matters and even a way for them to understand their purpose?
Well, I think the thing that I always put in front of students is what is your why? Like, why do you want to achieve what you want to achieve? And, you know, they're young, and so sometimes they don't know their why. But I remind them that, you know, the decisions you're making today will influence your future, but it's not the end. You know, a lot of us have taken a job thinking we'll be there forever and then moved on to something different. And so it's hard for them to remember that. And so I ask them, what's your why now? What do you want? What's your next step? And then you can change that. Your life evolves. Go somewhere else. Do something different. But what is your purpose? Like, what's going to move you to that next spot?
Thanks.
Yeah. For me, I sit around and I think, well, what can I do now? What would be of value? And it's incredibly powerful to come up with. Maybe me and a team member are sitting down, and we say, hey, what could we do? What should we do that would offer value? And it's kind of a weird thing to do because you've heard the old adage, find a need, fill a need. There's lots of needs to fill, and for some reason, I'm compelled to fill needs that might not even exist yet and then fail doing it. But it's exciting, and it's kind of like, hey, I wonder if there's a demand for this. And then you can do these things. You can throw something out there, and you kind of watch, and you squint at it, and people say, oh, that's incredibly stupid. And it's manifest when they won't swipe their credit card for it. I mean, it's kind of a crude thing in a way. But then you create something, and there's a small business owner out there, or there's a big company out there, or there's a group of people or an individual, and they're like, I've been waiting for this thing, and I needed this to thrive and to succeed. That is a powerful thing when you help people move their lives forward, when you help their businesses succeed. They can employ people. They can provide for their families. They transform their communities. That is a time in those moments, and then the subsequent supporting of those people where I really feel God's pleasure. As Rand pointed out, all work is good work. I mean, ethically, we can all probably name a few things that wouldn't be good work.
Sure.
But when we do things, we're supposed to do it to God's glory and his pleasure, to his benefit. And while that's also a challenging thing, that's where I see with the feedback that comes back from people saying, yes, this really helped me. It's deeply meaningful to experience that.
Do you have any like counsel or advice to people who find themselves in a role where they do have like that flexibility or that ability to imagine and either meet a need? And sometimes there's this sense of they have to, in a way, spiritualize their work in order to make it matter. But what I heard from you, Mark, is that like when you're doing the job that you're doing and you're allowing a business to flourish and that business is employing people, that in and of itself is bringing God glory. There's a goodness in that.
Yeah, I think there's... First of all, get an accountability partner. If you're anything like me, you need to make sure someone checks in with you occasionally, make sure you're actually working. Because creative people, entrepreneurs, will go into this death spiral of like a squirrel that sees something shiny, just one thing after another. That's just some practical advice. I think there's a danger in trying to, and I think you're insinuating this, over-spiritualize work. I have gone through this so much in my life where I'm like, well, maybe I should be doing something overtly Christian, something ministerial. The reality is the most effective place we can be is where we're at, thinking about glorifying God and extending his kingdom through our relationships, friendships, and all this kind of stuff. I forgot your question already, like that squirrel.
I think that's good. I think we'll come back to whatever I asked earlier. Yeah. Uh-huh, yeah. That's the squirrel work in action, right? Okay, there you go. Okay, so in our series, we also talked about how not only can work matter and not only can work feel fulfilling or purposeful, work can sometimes feel frustrating and difficult and exhausting and even soul-numbing. And so this next question for all of you, what's been hard in your work? What's been hard in your work? And how has God met you in that difficulty?
I think I'll try to go before Rand because he might trump me on this. But I think what's been really difficult is working with individuals where you can't always provide an answer or a solution. And that is tough. And I'm sure many of you work in those sort of situations where you want to support the individual with everything you have, and you just can't fix home life, you can't fix homelessness, you can't fix food insecurities, you know, things, tuition payments, things of that sort. And it's just hard. You want to be able to remove those obstacles, and so you do what you can, but you're not always able to meet all the needs, and that's very frustrating and hard for me.
I think to get very granular, and I've always wanted to use that word, is that for me, just the training. I mean, to get very practical, the training, the schooling and the training to get to, you know, where you can actually start. And then to the schedule. I mean, I think you talk to my wife, talk to my kids. I mean, it's the schedule is challenging. And, you know, I work half the Sundays and half the nights at home groups supposed to be, and that's been a real challenge over the past 30 some years. But where God's met me in that is I grew up in the church, and for me, church was one of these places that you really, that's where you grow spiritually. And yet work has become a place where I grow spiritually, where formation has happened, the interactions I have with people, my desperation, my calling out to the Lord for answers, for, you know, God, don't let me miss something here that I'm not supposed to miss, you know, and to get very, you know, close with my Savior at that point. When I'm running to a code, and I had this habit every time I'd go up in an elevator, and I still do it, doesn't matter where I'm at, I pray, because I was usually on my way to something traumatic. And it's been really a satisfying part of what I do to grow spiritually in that. I don't have to wait till all of a sudden I can get to a church on a Sunday to grow. I can grow in the midst of what I'm doing. And that's why when Ryan was sharing about work that matters, it's like, this is so important that we can realize that as important as this gathering is together, the formation and the growing that we do as believers should be happening every day. And work is one more way in which I can grow spiritually, and I can grow in a way that is a benefit to myself and to my family and to others.
Yeah, I would, I would say the same thing as my co-panelists have said here, that in the work is where we are developed as humans. I'm sure you're thinking of instances where you felt frustration or friction. And for me, what it's been in those moments is thinking as objectively as I can about God's nature, his desire for humanity, for humans, and thinking, how am I going to respond in this moment? What is God objectively say about the posture I should have in this moment? That is where incredible growth has happened, because it leads to, at moments with employees, with partners, with vendors, with customers, really interesting, sometimes super tough moments where I have to obey as best I can. Just jumping back a little bit to what I first thought I would share for this question is the biggest challenge is the friction of accomplishing something. For instance, I'm going through something right now. The details of it aren't important. It was something I legitimately thought was going to take maybe 6 weeks to do. That was 2 years ago, and it's still not complete, and it must be done. The investment in it is stupid, to the point where if you'd told Mark of 2 years ago, hey, I know what you think this is going to be, here's what it's actually going to be, I would have done a massive table flip, probably literally, and stormed out of the metaphorical room of my occupation. That is where another type of character development happens. God has met me there more than any other time, because I'm looking either across the camera, across the room at an employee or a partner or someone who's responsible for something, and I'm just frustrated, and I've got to take a posture of patience and know that either God is going to do the thing he wants to do through me and through my business and in the people who are benefit from it, or he's not. And I'm responsible to be as Christ-like as I possibly can be and take that situation one step at a time, trusting God the entire way.
Yeah, and so it sounds like, you know, from all three of your responses, that work matters not just when it's purposeful and when it's flourishing and when it's thriving, but that God meets us in our work when we engage in the thorns and thistles nature of that work and the pain. And in certain ways, there is an even deeper formation that happens when we encounter those needs that we can't meet, or when we encounter work that we thought was going to take 6 weeks and takes 2 years, that God is still present and God is still working through all of those things.
Can I just add one more thing? You know, sometimes I think we're encouraged to push a little bit into what is uncomfortable for us at work. And it's not always easy. And I mean, I have been there many times where I know this is my mission. I know this is what God's called me to. But I have to be public with my faith with a whole bunch of students that may not believe what I believe. And it gets really sticky sometimes and really difficult. And definitely faculty pushback from, you know, faculty and things of that sort. But God calls us continually to be light in these dark spaces, right? And so whatever you're doing, even if, you know, your job isn't a job, but it's something you do, God, it calls us to step into those spaces and be him to these people. And sometimes it can be just hard. I mean, it's just difficult sometimes.
Yeah. And so God being present in those difficult moments, transitioning a little bit into other difficult seasons, not just difficulty that we encounter in our work, whether it's paid or unpaid. You know, a few of the questions that we got from our community were in relation to transitional seasons or different seasons of life. Individuals who are heading into retirement or who are retired, individuals who maybe had a traditional career and now they're a stay-at-home parent, or maybe even individuals who are unemployed right now. They're in between jobs. And so just asking you three right now, have you ever experienced a season like that? And what would you say to someone in our community right now who's in that space?
Yeah, I can say, you know, I've been a mother, a stay-at-home mom, and I've had many different roles and many different jobs that I didn't get paid for that nobody would recognize. And I just want to say God recognizes that. God sees you and your hard work and your tenaciousness. I mean, parenting is not for the faint of heart, am I right? I mean, it is a hard job. And I just want to say, you know, for those that are retired, for those that may be looking for a job, for those that are in doing work that no one recognizes, God is still there and recognizing your mission. He still calls you to something very specific. And so throughout my life with all the transitions, I have tried to keep that in front of me, that this is my mission where I am right now. And sometimes it's just waking up to the vomiting child, you know, in the middle of the night. And sometimes it's things that may, you know, to the outside world look more important. But whatever it is, you know, God has you in that space for a reason. And he's using you in those spaces.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, this is similar to a question I know that's coming up a little bit later. In the book, Every Good Endeavor, has anyone read that by Tim Keller? Great book about work. He talks about the chair he was sitting in. And he was kind of comparing different work. We have the esteemed positions in society, and then we have the positions people probably wouldn't want, you know, someone who just digs ditches or something like that. And he says all of this work is meaningful and important, whether you're getting paid for your work or whatever. He talked about this chair he was sitting in, and he said, what would it take for me to make this chair if all the constituent parts, pieces, and people, process, and history hadn't come before me to make all the technology to make this chair. And I won't go into how he breaks this down. It would take a lifetime for him to make one chair, and it would probably fall apart when he sat on it, right? I think about that a lot. People tend to think, oh, you're an entrepreneur, how exciting. There are so many moments where I'm just digging ditches, and it just sucks. And I'm like, God, is this what you want me to do? I'm horrible at it, by the way, digging ditches. And I think about that chair metaphor and think about, wow, if that's true, just one little example, like if there's, I think in one of the, he does this in sermons and in the book, like if it was made out of wood, you would have to go chop down a tree. Oh, but before you could chop down the tree, you would have to create an axe. Oh, before you could create an axe, you'd have to go create a smelter. Oh, before you do that, you'd have to go dig the materials out of the ground. It's just ridiculous. It's deconstructing a chair. I think about that moment and think about this is what God has made us to do. God gets glory and gives glory, and we have the opportunity to turn our eyes and our hearts towards God and whatever that work is. That always at least partially encourages me when I'm doing spreadsheet work.
About 4 years ago, I got just situations occurred where it was clear that I needed to make some changes. And I got COVID, and I was just done working nights. And my job kind of came to an end. And I spent 5 months wrestling with this question. Every night I'd take our dog out and walk and just look at the stars and say, God, you know, I've done this for 30 years. What's next? And He began to focus me on what I love to do. I love people. I love talking with people. I love the procedures, you know. But it's the people interaction that really sustains the life in me. And so, he began to give me thoughts and ideas, and I got a job. So I moved from the emergency room to an urgent care up in Snohomish County. I work a number of urgent cares up there, and I'm still able to do what I love to do. I see people, I still do, I love to sew people up, all of that stuff that, it's what I'm trained to do, it's what I love to do, you know, and so, but I totally get that all of a sudden something comes to an end and it's like, the question is that who I am or is that what I do? And it took me that process to remember I'm a child of God. I'm a husband, I'm a dad, I'm a grandpa, I'm all of those things. But what I do matters to God, and it matters to me that God is represented through me, through the gifts that He's given me. I wasn't ready to retire at that point. I've got a lot of stuff in me I love to do still. And so that process, though, of determining, you know, who I am, what I love to do, what God has for me to do, and then beginning to pursue that, what is the avenue that that's going to be expressed. And honestly, you know, what, 3-4 years later, I can say I'm absolutely loving right in the center of where God has me. It was absolutely Him that was in the middle of that transition. And for those of you that are going through the transition, let me remind you that God is in the middle of the transition. He's doing something in you, reminding you of who you are and wanting to make those changes in your life, in your circumstances that allowed me to be sustainable for another 10 years, you know? And so that was a very real question of going through that.
Yeah, so Randy, would you just say to the individual who, whether they're in between jobs or transitioning into, you know, being a stay-at-home parent or going back into a career, or an individual who is on the cusp of retirement, that the tension that they're feeling as they're entering into that season, not to shy away from that, but to lean into it and listen to what God might be saying and doing through that tension, yeah?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, I think to assume that we're going to be absolutely the same all the way through life, God transitions us both in the people that are around us, the jobs that we have, and it's to assume that we're going to continue like forever till the day we retire. I think God is preparing us, even in the midst of getting ready to retire. What is after that? I mean, you can go to Arizona, but I mean, I think it's... but for me, it's still about people. Those things, those qualities in me that I value and I think God values through me, he begins to distill those in a way that even in that transition to retirement, that transition to a different job, are able to be expressed in a way that is going to be, I mean, I guess the latter's greater than the former, being able to express that.
That's good. So let's shift now to faith at work. And we've touched on this a little bit already on the job site, wherever one might be in work. Some environments are open to it, others not so much. What has that looked like for each of you? And how have you learned to follow Jesus in your work life, even when there are limitations?
I'm a bit of an anomaly compared to conversations I've had with friends that work at large organizations. Specifically, when I've talked to Braden Unger over there, works at a place like Microsoft, and the risks you take being open with your core faith and then even the ancillary issues that come out of what you believe. I have the privilege of, well, I mean, there's consequences, but I'm the boss, right? And so... however, it's been interesting, and I think regardless of where you work, you can have experiences like I've had. I'm relatively evangelistic, in that I'm interested in poking the bear a little bit with people. In a place like Seattle, where our office used to be downtown, it was not hard to get into a conversation with someone about, well, you know, what is objective truth? And then, as you may know, in Seattle,
as one does,
I have like five or six entrees into that conversation. And I used to commute with people. I was part of this ride-sharing thing. I would commute in from Snohomish and back, and I would get all sorts of people from all walks of life, from all parts of the world, riding in the car with me. And it was not uncommon with employees or with people, random people, to have this conversation. And I just think as we are faithful and honest with ourselves, if we seek faithfulness to God and we're honest with ourselves about where we are in our belief, the substance of our belief with God, you will not help but represent the kingdom of God. And, you know, we worry about, like, I need to be evangelistic. I need to get up on the lunchroom table and wave my Bible and maybe even throw it at somebody. I don't think that's necessary. I've had so many fruitful and frustrating conversations with people that have challenged my faith and sometimes move the needle in their lives. I am in an interesting situation where my job is never really at risk. I might lose a customer, I might lose an employee, but no one's going to take my job away. And so I think that is an interesting thing that some others I know talk about. But this, in a nutshell, I think it's inevitable to have conversations to a degree when we examine our Christian lives and think about it.
I think for me at the, you know, at a college level, it's been difficult at times. I have shared my faith with students and have had students get angry at me because it wasn't their version of Christianity or what they expected Christianity to look like. And I remember telling one of my deans, who's above me, I said, you know, I don't think I'm going to share with students anymore that I'm a Christian because it's too messy. You know, they expect me to be something really different than what I am. And he said, you know, I really challenge you on that. You know, you need to show up authentically in spaces, and you need students to know who you are truly. And even if it's hard, I just challenge you because they need to know. They need to know Christians that are light in spaces and not hate and not hurt. And I have a lot of students, particularly in the LGBTQ community, who have been raised in faith, lovely parents, and have turned away from that faith because of hate and disconnection. And when I tell students, you know what, I'm going to love you and I'm going to value you for who you are in the, you know, at this college, some people get really angry about that. And I have since learned that I need to show up authentically. And even when it's hard, I have to show up at work and be who I truly am and proclaim who I know Jesus to be in these spaces. And sometimes if I run into a student that wants to, discuss theology with me or something. I have lovely students that come into my office, and they usually come for snacks, but they come and they will talk to me about theology, and I love that because I invite their conversations, and oftentimes we both leave feeling valued and loved, and that's my goal. But it's not always easy. I mean, it's hard to push that envelope, especially when it's not necessarily accepted at the at a college or university level.
I think you have to be wise in how you share, but I think there's also there's very few people that won't go to a deeper level if you ask them the right way. I mean, I go into a room, how you doing? If you're above the age of two, you say good, and it's like, really? That's the, why are you here? But to be able to go to that next level, how are you doing? And it's nice to be in that position where, I mean, your doctor asks you any question in the world, right? And to be able to do that, we can talk about stress. We can talk about how are things going at home. And honestly, that's when I received some of the greatest communication between the Father and myself. And I'm not going anywhere in this conversation. What is? And there's just some line that you get, and this happens both with patients, it happens with staff, it happens. I mean, it's with anyone. I mean, I think there is a something to be said for the relational aspect of being able to have conversation, willing to go deeper. I don't always say the word Jesus, we talk about support. We talk about, when someone's going through crisis, is there a pastor? Is there someone that you can talk with? And just using buzzwords like that opens a whole, other conversation. And so I think there are those opportunities. One of my daughters works completely remote, and I often wonder, how do you do that when you're working completely remote? And she finds ways to have relationship with coworkers and everything, but I think it's something that we need to strive to do if we are truly, representatives of Christ. Then that's something that should want to come out of us. And looking for opportunities to do that, I think, is important to a lost world.
Can I share a little bit more? Both what you guys shared reminded me of experience I had where I realized that I just really didn't have much of a genuine interest in certain people I would encounter and work with. And so I asked God, I read something somewhere about how people connect with the ephemeral, with the spiritual. It starts by connecting often with another human. And so I started to pray, God, help me to be actually genuinely, not superficially, but genuinely interested in the lives of others. Now, you're going to think I'm some sort of dysfunctional robot that I'm admitting that, but I wanted more of that beyond the people I just naturally loved. And that was transformational for me, and I've seen it be transformational in other people's lives, even down to the person that serves you the coffee. Just ask yourself, am I even remotely interested in this other human that's in front of me? And some of us have jobs that we just don't get a lot of that kind of interaction, but the Holy Spirit really, I believe, shows up when that is our heart's desire, because it is definitely God's heart for people. He's deeply interested in his creation, and incredibly fruitful ministry and friendship comes out of that. That isn't overtly preachy, right? It's quiet faithfulness.
Yeah. So let's land the plane with this then. If someone here today is thinking, I'm not really sure that my work matters at all, what would you say to them? How would you encourage them today?
Well, I think God has put you in your position for a reason, wherever it is, at home, cleaning, you know, accounting, whatever you're doing. And it's not so much about the task as it is about you showing up in those spaces authentically, as a believer, being light to whoever, wherever, whatever it is you're doing, right? And being true to what God is calling you to do and to say and to be in those spaces. I think our job is to breathe life into others and to bring hope, because that's what Jesus is about. And so whatever we're doing, I would say, do those things. Focus on that mission.
I have a father who loves me and doesn't give me useless things to do. You know, if my dad would give me things, I don't always understand what he would have me do, but I know that he has a much bigger picture, and something as big as work matters. Even if you don't understand it, even if you don't get it, to trust that the Lord is doing things in you, through you. There's been jobs when he's done things through me, honestly, to touch other people. I was just the conduit of that. I mean, it was the work, but it was positioning me in a way that I could make a difference. And so I guess my encouragement is that whatever you're doing, the work itself matters. The relationships that you're around matter. What God's doing in you matters. And I think when we look at all of that, that is a situation that contributes to our growth as humans, children of Christ, and allows us to really be those representatives of love to others, and that's it.
I 100% agree with you both, and I do think it is worth, in that position you're in, or a position you could be in, whether it's a business owner, a faithful employee, a leader in your organization, it is worth asking yourself, is there a complacency here? Is there a false contentment here? Especially for Americans, Western people, we struggle with contentment. But I also think it's worth asking God, through your spirit, what are my blind spots? Where should I be going? How should I be swinging for the fences? In America, it's in some ways, take this with a grain of salt, almost impossible to fail swinging for the fences. There's such a safety net in your communities, often within our jobs. We don't want to be foolish, but I also encourage people to, while we're thanking the Lord, we're being diligent in what we're doing, we're showing up in what we're doing, it's also worth evaluating what you're doing and saying, God, what would you have for me? Where could you show up with me? What, you know, slight tangent or reinvestment in what I'm doing. It pays to evaluate as we trust the Lord in the roles he has us in and where he might want us to go.
Can I just add, you know, we each have a place of privilege, you know, whatever it is, wherever you are. And with that comes voice. And some of us have a lot of power and some of us have a little bit of power. But it's our job to advocate for every human being, to remove obstacles, to look for barriers, to look for, you know, systemic bias or racism or all those things. And so, like what you were saying, to look at where we are and to really examine those things and maybe push into the uncomfortable a little bit for the sake of someone else.
That's great. Thank you, Paula. And thank you, Mark. And thank you, Rand. Can we thank this crew up here this morning? I'm going to invite the band up. Would you stand with me? You know, as we wrap this up this morning, I just want to remind all of us of a few things as we've been discussing work, not just today, but over the last 4 weeks. I mentioned this a few weeks ago. You are not a machine built for meaningless motion. Just remember that as you go into your week this week, but you are an image bearer made for meaningful movement. And whether your work is paid or unpaid, whether you are in a transitional season, whether you are retired, overwhelmed, unnoticed, I just want to say this one last time as we wrap this series up. Whatever God has put your hand to, your work matters, okay? Your work matters. So tomorrow morning, whether you're preparing for a class or you're folding laundry or you're working on a spreadsheet, remember that whatever you do, your ordinary work is not ordinary. Anything done in love lasts and will resonate into eternity. And so as we wrap up, so grateful for our time together as we've explored this idea of work, I'm going to go ahead and pray. We're going to sing one more song and we can enjoy our Memorial Day weekends. Would you pray with me? God, we just want to thank you for the stories that we heard today. We thank you that you are thank you for the reminder. You are not some distant God. You are not distant from our work, but you are deeply present in every single moment. Whether our work is paid or unpaid, whether people see it and applaud it or it goes unnoticed and unseen, whether we are excited to wake up in the morning and go to work or we're deeply frustrated by what we have to do, you are there, you are present, you are in the middle of it. So as we head into another week this week, God, we just ask that you would give us eyes to see our work the way you do. Remind us that we are not just machines, but we are image bearers made for meaningful work. And when our work is done in love, God, even when it feels small or mundane or ordinary, it lasts. Would you just help us to show up with integrity in everything we do, with presence, with grace. And would our everyday efforts become places where your kingdom quietly takes root. We entrust all of this to you, and we pray this in Jesus' great name. Amen.